First case on our calendar is Rich's Department Stores versus William Wilkins. Tax Commissioner, Mr. Hubbard.
May it please the court, this case involves the true value of Rich's Department Stores retail inventory for its Ohio store location. Like most major retailers, Rich's uses the retail inventory method, or RIM method, for determining the book value of its inventories, and reports those book values to the SEC on its financial balance sheets. And those balance sheets are, of course, used by shareholders and prospective shareholders who look to those values as the proper values for the inventory. The commissioner has promulgated a longstanding administrative rule concerning retailers' inventories. The starting point of that rule is RIM book value, and then certain enumerated reductions to RIM book value are permitted. In this case, upon audit, the commissioner granted the enumerated reductions from Rich's stated book values to determine Ohio true value. Those were substantial reductions that averaged for the three-year periods over 20% reductions from book value. But the commissioner did not grant the further reductions requested by Rich's Department Stores from Rich's own book values for so-called vendor markdown allowances. Vendor markdown allowances are voluntary reductions made by the vendors of Rich's Department Store for amounts owing those vendors in recognition that an item of merchandise or a line of merchandise is selling below the expected retail price. In this case, the commissioner denied the vendor markdown allowances because they were not one of the enumerated reductions from book value set forth in the commissioner's RIM rule as to how to determine true value. The Board of Tax Appeals reversed the commissioner and ordered the commissioner to reduce the valuations even further from book value in recognition of these vendor markdown allowances. The board erred in three fundamental ways. First, the board failed to give due deference to the commissioner's own interpretation of his administrative rule. Second, even without considering due deference, the board violated the plain meaning of that rule. And third, even if the board's interpretation of the commissioner's rule were correct, the board erred because Riches did not establish the necessary proof that the vendor markdown allowances related to Ohio inventories. Instead, they used an annual national average for their stores everywhere rather than for the 28 stores in Ohio. They had over 100 stores nationwide, and they looked to the overall vendor markdown allowances everywhere and then applied a national average as opposed to looking at the actual experience in the Ohio stores. And because vendor markdown allowances are product specific and circumstances specific, and because the Ohio personal property tax law is based on actual inventory on hand at every month end for each store location in Ohio, and each taxing district in Ohio has a separate tax rate, so you have to determine what the value is for each taxing district.
Mr. Hubbard, can you help me understand how the markdown allowance process works?
Yes, Your Honor.
The markdown allowance comes from the vendor, am I
yes.
right? And at what point in the sale process does it enter the stream of commerce?
Well, basically, Your Honor, these vendor markdown allowances occur after Rich's purchases inventory from the vendor, and then Rich's has in its mind an expected retail price that it wants to sell the inventory for.
Yes.
And then if it's not selling as well as expected, then Rich's will go to the vendor and say, you know, this inventory isn't selling as well. Can you cut us a break and excuse some of the debt we owe you on
the
purchase?
Well, the question I have is, does the markdown allowance reduce the cost of the inventory, or does it change the selling price of the product, or is there a difference in those two?
Your Honor, it's actually the case that for valuation purposes on the balance sheet, there's no reduction in value of the inventory on hand. What that amount does is in determining the gross profit, at the end of the period, you have the income statement, right? And that measures the income. So it doesn't have any difference. The vendor markdown allowances don't affect the inventory values at all.
But,
what they do
how
is
does a markdown allowance affect the cost of the goods in the inventory?
Well, basically, under the retail inventory method, the acquisition cost isn't used. What you looked at is the sales price, and then that sales price is reduced by the gross, the normal profit margin. So you back into what approximates the acquisition cost. In other words, if an item is purchased for $100 by Rich's, and Rich's anticipates a 50% markup that they're going to make, they're going to sell it for $150, all right? The way that at the end of the period when that item is on hand and it's the sales price is $150, the barcode, they figure out that's $150 is the sales price, and then they apply a 50% profit margin to back into the acquisition cost. So in the retail inventory method, you're not even looking at acquisition cost. You're looking to is the retail sales price.
But in reality, the store has paid less for the merchandise when it cuts its check to the vendor.
Absolutely. Right?
And the profit margin presumably is going to be whatever it is,
right.
But the cost of the merchandise in the end is less.
Right.
And that is an actual markdown from what it thought it was going to pay.
Well, it's actually, the one way to look at it is it reduces the gross profit. I mean, it increases the gross profit that the taxpayer gets, that Rich's would get.
Not necessarily, because they didn't make as much profit, which is why they got the markdown.
No. Let me just give you an example. Maybe that will clarify it. Okay, the item's purchased for $100 by Rich's. They anticipate a 50% markup, so they're hoping to sell it for $150. They sell it instead for $140, or that's what it's held out. So they go to the vendor and say, we're only getting $140. We're only getting a 40% markup on this, not 50%. So can you reduce what we owe you? We owe you $100, and they maybe reduce it $3 to $97. So now the gross profit margin is $140 minus $97. That's how you would calculate it.
But the cost to the store of purchasing the merchandise now becomes $97, not $100.
Yeah, but under the retail inventory method, you don't look to the cost of the inventory. You look to the retail sales price, which is $140, and then apply the normal profit margin. So, in other words, under this particular method of determining inventory value, which Rich's uses, they don't look to, the acquisition cost doesn't factor in. There's no tracking of the acquisition cost. The reason for that is you have all these retailers who use the RIM method have a diversified product line of thousands of different products and numerous items of those products. Think of a pharmacy really any retail store has so many different items of merchandise now.
So in the method you claim they should have used, they could actually be paying tax on more value than they purchased the items for.
Well, actually, Your Honor, it's possible that that could occur if you're just looking at the book value. But under our rule, the commissioner allows substantial reductions from book value. In this case, they're like 20%. So we're already 20% below book value in the testimony.
But why does the commissioner allow that? There are other factors the commissioner allows that for, not necessarily the fact that there were markdowns.
Well, it's basically in recognition that it's called the next quarter markdowns, and that's after the holiday season. A lot of times inventory is marked down. And so that's after the 12-month measuring period. We look to the next quarter markdowns, and we allow those as an offset, which is a very generous reduction.
But those markdowns are on the expected profit, and they recognize they're not getting expected profit because they're having to clear out after the, and that doesn't affect the cost that they paid, which this method accounts for the cost that they paid. You're saying the commission allows the markdowns. It's for other reasons that those reductions are given by the commissioner.
Well, Your Honor, I think really what we're looking at under the rule, though, is that the real rule doesn't look to acquisition cost at all. It looks to the book value and allows reductions from the book value in the commissioner's discretion. And in this case, because the commissioner already granted some substantial reductions, it seems like any further reductions would clearly be unwarranted. Remember, for their own financial statement purposes, they're declaring what they believe the value to be of their inventory. And we're giving them well below that already. So this minor reduction, essentially minor, it's between 6 and 10% additional reductions from what the 20% reductions we already gave them. So by any realistic measure of true value, we've already been very reasonable to them.
Council, is there another accounting method that would take into consideration the price paid for the, or the acquisition cost, that is an accepted accounting measure utilized by a merchant such as Rich's?
Absolutely not.
So this accounting method that purely deals in the profit margin and the reduction of the profit margin is the only method that could be employed here.
Well, Your Honor, for this particular kind of taxpayer, it would, because they have no data on the other. They don't track the acquisition cost. And I make that point in the brief that if we were suddenly to adopt this procedure, it would require taxpayers and the tax commissioner to develop an entirely different accounting system. And that's why they use national averages, because they couldn't track the inventory by item, by store. It would be impossible to do that. That would be asking them to develop an entirely new accounting system. And that's why we're using book value under the RIM method as the starting point and not acquisition costs. Their method is like completely, it's like they're saying we should apply a rule of French language when we're talking about English. I mean, it's just not, it doesn't work.
And Mr. Hubbard, the retail inventory method, that's the RIM that you're talking
right.
about. That's laid out in the administrative code. Is that the 5703.317?
Yes, Your Honor.
And it's specific about how this method is to apply to taxpayers such as Rich's.
Absolutely, Your Honor. It's in 1948. It's been applied since then. And you know, frankly, even before 1948, the commissioner had an administrative formula, and this court in Higbee's addressed that administrative formula. It also addressed this. The retail inventory method's been around since the 1920s, and Ohio personal property tax on inventory was around long before then. But when that method came into play, the commissioner adopted an administrative formula, and it started out with RIM book value and allowed certain enumerated reductions. And the taxpayer in Higbee said, we think there should be additional reductions over and above those that you granted in determining true value.
But if you're valuing the inventory at the expected margin of profit price, in your
right.
case, in your example, $150,
right.
but it's been marked down to $140,
right.
why isn't the taxpayer entitled to that markdown?
They are.
In the inventory?
They are. See, the markdowns they actually experience, they get. They get that. If it goes down to 140 and there's a 50% markup, that knocks the book value down to if it's $100 and they expected a 50% markup, and now they're getting 140, so you would knock it down, the book value would be reduced down to 90.
But the market
$5
allowance,
or around
market
that.
Allowance comes from the vendor.
Okay. One thing, Your Honor, the actual markdowns experienced are factored in. It's the contributions made by the vendor that not. But if to the extent the items are being marked down, that is being reflected. It's just the vendor's voluntary reduction of the amounts owing to the vendor that aren't and don't factor into it.
And counsel, those reductions, the credit for that, how is that applied? Is that applied specifically to the goods in question, or is that sort of a lump sum that's offered as a credit for future purchases?
It's really a credit for future purposes, Your Honor, and that's why it factors into the overall gross profit, but isn't related to any specific inventory. And that's under all standards of general accepted accounting principles. And that's what our expert witness testified, and frankly, their own witness just testified that there was no reduction in the valuation on the balance sheet for these vendor markdown allowances. Any further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Hubbard.
Thank you.
Mr. Engel.
Thank you. May it please the court. I think Mr. Hubbard's introduction really brought this case into clearer view. And you'll recall that he said, first of all, this case involves a question of the valuation of the inventory of Rich's for the tax years in question. That's right. That's a question of fact. That's a question that's particularly within the province of the Board of Tax Appeals. This court has stated on innumerable occasions that it will not reweigh the evidence, it will not second-guess the Board of Tax Appeals on the evidence as to factual findings. If the board makes a factual finding and there's evidence in the record to support it, then that decision will be upheld by this court. And that's precisely the situation that's presented in the case here today. Now, this is indeed a somewhat unusual case in the sense that the retail inventory method of accounting is not one that most people come in contact with. There's not many cases that this court has addressed it. In fact, it's been many, many years since that issue has come to this court. But what's important to remember and important to realize is, again, Mr. Hubbard's statements in his introduction that net book value, the value on the balance sheet, is what's reported to the world in the SEC records and things such as that. But what's important to note is Ohio law recognizes that and doesn't mean that net book value is the end of the inquiry. Indeed, the statutes, if you look at them, state clearly that net book value is the starting point, but that the assessor has a duty to look at all evidence and to determine whether or not true value is higher than net book value or lower than net book value. The statute clearly contemplates that it could be either one, and that net book value is not the end point. Contrary to the arguments the tax commissioner has made here today, that net book value is the end all be all, and we don't look any further. Now, the Board of Tax Appeals realized that and said, let's look at the evidence, let's see what happens here. And the fact of the matter is, the evidence clearly indicated that a vendor markdown allowance is a credit that is provided by the vendor that, in effect, reduces the cost of the inventory. So let's start understand that there is, in fact, a reduction of cost to Riches in this case.
Is that perspective, as was answered by opposing counsel? In other words, it's a credit to be factored in?
Your Honor, the way that's applied is that when, first of all, understand that the markdown allowance isn't something that's agreed to after the fact. It's agreed to up front between Riches and its vendors. And it's
only— Is there a range there? If you don't make a 50% profit, then we're going to give you X amount of vendor markdown allowance?
The actual amount is not predetermined, but the fact that an allowance would be permitted is discussed beforehand, that if the agreed upon margin isn't attained, we're going to come back and talk about an appropriate allowance in order to—
Which will then prospectively be applied.
Your Honor, I'm not—
Does Riches pay for its merchandise when it acquires it?
Sometime after it acquires it, it does.
Does it have to wait until those items are sold before they pay the vendor?
No, they can pay the vendor before they sell the items.
So they pay the vendor X amount of dollars for 100 widgets, okay?
Okay.
Then they don't sell those items at the anticipated price, correct? And then they approach the vendor and say, we couldn't make what we all thought it would, these items would sell for. We need a break from the vendor because of the fact that we had to reduce it by 10%, 20%, whatever. So our margin, our profit is lower than what we anticipated. And at that point, the vendor says, okay, you know, we'll give you this credit. Does the vendor return money to them, or does that go against future purchases?
Neither one, Your Honor, and here's why. It's not necessarily that way. First of all, recognize that the markdown allowance isn't paid anytime there's a markdown. Riches understands that there are going to be certain markdowns. The markdown allowance is only made when those markdowns exceed what was anticipated in the special and extraordinary instances. Now, what happens is that when the vendor agrees to make a markdown allowance, a credit is applied in the agreed amount against the account payable that Riches has with that particular vendor. Now, that doesn't just apply to future purchases. In fact, if there aren't currently sufficient payables there to cover it, it's not credited there. The markdown allowance is credited against the existing payables. That may well be the inventory that's here in question. Now, we don't know for certain that's the case because of the vast amount that we have. But it's important to note that the allowance does not necessarily happen after the inventory's been paid for. It is taken into account because there is an existing payable on Rich's books.
So what if there is no existing payable? How does the credit get realized by Rich?
If there is no existing payable, the testimony indicated that the markdown allowance is put in a suspension account, if you will. And quite frankly, we did not have testimony. I believe there was maybe a comment that said once there is sufficient coverage, it may be applied at that point. But the testimony was clearly that while that is indeed looked at, is there sufficient coverage? In the vast majority of cases, both Ms. Velarde and Ms. Peralta admitted that there's sufficient in the accounts payable department.
And that could be for the merchandise that is Rich's is having difficulty selling, or it could be for other merchandise that Rich's is selling but is selling well. It's not targeted specifically to amounts due for any particular merchandise, but it's available for any amount that Rich's owes to the vendor. Is my understanding correct?
I think you're right, Your Honor. It first of all can only be applied against that particular vendor, but it may be applied against other merchandise acquired from that vendor, because obviously the payables account for that vendor are going to include a multitude of items, some of which may have involved a markdown allowance and some of which may not have. But again, that gets to the whole idea of inventory being a fungible, being a huge mass that isn't tracked item by item.
Mr. Hubbard argues that if we adopt your view, we will just revolutionize this entire industry. And I guess the parade of horribles is we create chaos in that industry. What is your reaction to that position?
Your Honor, the facts, the situation have existed for years. The question has been merely whether markdown allowances reduce the cost, reduce the value of the inventory for tax purposes. That's the only issue that's presented here. It doesn't change the process whatsoever.
How common is this practice in the industry?
In the retail industry, it's very common. The testimony was in the fashion industry in particular, not necessarily drug stores or hardware stores, but markdown allowances are typically given with respect to fashion items.
Has this been adopted, has your view been adopted in any other cases that you're aware of? Or is this the first time that is being presented to the tax commissioner and the board?
Your Honor, if you are talking about the specific issue of whether a markdown allowance should be considered, I do know that there have been other audits. There's testimony in the record that while it may not on an audit be permitted, it has been done to resolve cases in the past. I don't believe that there is a reported case either by the board or this court that addresses it. But I think, Your Honor, the more important principle is this, if I may. This court has often and consistently distinguished between net book value on the one hand and true value on the other. And it has consistently held that the tax commissioner must look at all of the evidence and consider all of the rules in arriving at true value. And that's what the board did here. Contrary to what the commissioner would have this court do, the commissioner's position is, well, we use this method, we get to net book value, and you know what? You can't take it below net book value. And that's simply wrong. It's contradicted by the statutes, 57, 11, 18, and 21, and it's contradicted by this court's prior decisions dealing with inventory.
Mr. Engel, it seems to me that the opposing counsel didn't exactly say that net book value is the only value we're talking about here. But I wanted to get to the regulation, the 5703.317. Are you suggesting that your position falls within that particular regulation, that it's an interpretation of that regulation?
Your Honor, our position, and I believe the BTA's position, was that we don't even get to the gist of the rule. Because what we are trying to do in the first instance, if you look at the rule, the first thing the rule says is that you start with the cost for the inventory as reflected in the books and records of the taxpayer, and then you make certain reductions and certain adjustments. We're not looking at those certain adjustments and reductions. What we're trying to figure out is what's the cost of the inventory in the first instance? That's the first issue, and that's where the board said we don't get to all the other stuff that's in the rule. And that's where our position has been, that we're not worried about whether this is the 3-month markdown or whether it's shrinkage or whether it's a cash discount. We don't even get to those issues. We're trying in the first instance to determine cost.
Counsel, the opposing counsel argued essentially that the discounts from net book value already take into account the reduced profit margin that a retailer might have. And I guess my question is, if we start up front and talk and allow the vendor discounts as a cost, would that mean on the discounts that are allowed by the tax commissioner, those would have to be reduced so you'd get less of a discount from net cost in order to make this wash?
Your Honor, in this case, that's already done because the markdowns that are allowed under the rule are net markdowns. Net markdowns. And the testimony in the record from Ms. Siciliano was that when we're talking about markdown allowances, which is the reduction that we're trying to see, that amount is not included in the net markdowns that are discussed by the rule. That's why it's a net markdown. So we're not double dipping. We're not asking for the same reduction twice. We're contending. And what the board found was that this is a reduction in cost that must be taken into consideration to reduce the cost, and it doesn't duplicate any of the other adjustments. Now, I think it's important, too, if you look at the testimony of Mr. Nolfi, the administrator, his testimony was couched in terms like, I think this is a generous reduction, I think this covers a number of things, but he could not say exactly what was covered by it. The only evidence on that point is Ms. Siciliano's testimony that these markdown allowances are not considered in the net markdowns that the rule looks at. There is no double dipping on that point. And so we don't even get to the gist of the rule. Now, if I may, one last point to address here, and that is whether or not Riches has proven the extent of the error in this case. I think it's important to look at the decisions that the tax commissioner relies on, and again, to look at this court's role, not as the trier of fact, but really to determine whether the board's decision is reasonable and lawful. In the United Telephone case, there simply were no records. The taxpayer did a sampling, it did an extrapolation, and in that particular case, this court said, you know what, if you don't have the records, then we're not going to allow you to take a reduction in value. In MCI, we had a situation where there was a gap reduction that was made at the parent level, but not at the taxpayer level. And once again, the court said, you don't have the records. We're not going to allow that reduction. In this case, that simply isn't the fact. The amount of the markdown allowances is in the record. Under the retail inventory method, cost is an average. It's a department by department, line by line average that is doesn't know the boundaries of tax jurisdictions. It doesn't know the boundaries of states. It's an average that's computed over the entire division, in this case, Lazarus's. The Board of Tax Appeals looked at that. They said, you know what? You've got evidence. You've got the numbers. You've got testimony that explains how you get to them, that traces it through. We find that evidence credible. And taxpayer, we think you're entitled to that reduction. Now, again, there is evidence in the record that supports that. This court's determination isn't that there's no evidence, Board of Tax Appeals, you couldn't find a decision, but rather, in this case, there is evidence, and this court should find that that decision is reasonable and lawful. Lastly, one reference to the Higbee decision. I think it's interesting that the tax commissioner cites that case, because if you look at page 10 in their reply brief, in the section of Higbee that they quote, in the Higbee case, this court stated that it's a question of value, that the Board of Tax Appeals could have found those adjustments were appropriate, but that it didn't. And this court is not going to substitute its judgment for that of the Board of Tax Appeals and say it was wrong. That's exactly this case. That's exactly our position. And we think Higbee stands for the proposition that this case ought to be affirmed because it is both reasonable and lawful. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Engel. Mr. Hubbard, you saved just a little less than a minute.
I wanted to address Justice Lansker's observation that it's certainly not our position that book value is per se what true value is. In fact, under our rule, we granted them reductions that averaged over 20% below book value. If we want to depart from the rule and just look at the acquisition cost, they're going to pay several million dollars more each year.
Counsel, appears the argument between yourself and Mr. Engel comes down to his position that this is all turns on factual
right.
determinations, and you seem to be arguing it's a legal interpretation. It's a matter of law.
Yeah,
let me take you back to the factual question, and Justice Kupp raised that with Mr. Engel. I take it you disagree as to whether or not this adjustment is double counting the discounts. Think it is?
Well, basically what I'm saying, Your Honor, is that under the rule that we have promulgated, and it's been in effect for all these
I'm
years.
I'm asking you as a mathematical fact. Mr. Engel says it's not double counting.
Right.
So that's a factual question. Where does the
right.
state come down on that
well,
factual question?
Your Honor, it is a separate reduction over and above all the other reductions from book value we're talking about. So, no, it's not double dipping in that sense.
All right.
But.
So the two of you agree on that?
Yes, but I strongly disagree that what the board did is they interpreted our rules starting point incorrectly. The board thought that the starting point is acquisition cost, and it's not, and then went on from there and disregarded the fact that the commissioner had already granted reductions from book value of over 20%. So we're not taking the position that we looked at cost.
So
if we looked at cost, the value would be a lot higher than what was assessed.
So you disagree as to where the fence is between fact
yeah,
and
yeah,
law.
I mean, he's just totally mischaracterizing our position. Our position isn't that you look to book value exclusively. That was the starting point, and our rule allows substantial reductions from that where there are markdowns after the end of the year that we allow.
Are the tax commissioner's reductions done on a taxpayer-by-taxpayer basis, or are these some general percentages that are determined, you know, from a
Your Honor, it's based on each taxpayer's specific store locations, each location differently for each month end. You look to see what the markdowns are. This is, you're talking about, the rule starts with book value. The book values are for that location for that month. And then those month ends are averaged, okay? So we're looking at very specific data. And then, with respect to the reductions from book value to get to true value, those are also specific to those store. And they're based on the markdowns that actually occurred to the inventory during the next 3 months after the holiday season. So, and what they're doing instead is looking at a national average. And the reason, Your Honor, Justice O'Donnell, the Parade of Horribles is not in what they're claiming, which is the national average, but if you were to do it right, if you were to look at the specific stores and the inventory in the stores and which of the which inventory received the vendor markdown allowances, then you would have to create an entirely new accounting system. So that's the Parade of Horribles we're seeing. If they did it right, under the way they did it, it's easy. They take the national average, and so they don't have to establish that there were any vendor markdown allowances with respect to their Ohio inventories. They could have all been out of state. It's sheer speculation on this record.
You've used your time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The case is submitted. Please be advised of our opinion.